Wake Up Call continues. Dr. Billy Gaither joins us here. Former Tennessee Tiger, played for Coach J.E. Hot O'Brien, and now resides in the Ozark area. Appreciate you giving us some time this morning, Dr. Gaither. Good morning to you.
Well, it's good to be with you, Mike.
We appreciate you coming on. I was talking to our good friend that calls the Carroll of Ozark games down there, Les Peralt, and he says, yeah, I got a guy down here that I work out with pretty regularly that played for Coach O'Brien. Would you be interested in having him on the air? And by all means, yes. It's good to talk to you. I didn't know about your playing days until yesterday, but I looked you up. You had a pretty successful time here, and you were recognized by the Montgomery Advertiser as one of their top backs back when you graduated, which would have been the 1950 season. 51 was your graduating year. So let's go back to those days and just kind of talk about it. You were coming in as Tennessee had been, you know, on this tremendous streak, 57 games without a loss in the 1940s. So I guess your first year would have come right after that. So talk about that. When did you first take the field under Coach O'Brien?
Okay, Mike, the reason I didn't get to play in the 9th and 10th grade was because of an accident. But in my junior and senior years, the years of 49 and 50 is when I played under Coach O'Brien and in football. But, of course, I played basketball under him and also baseball under him.
That's a good point. We always talk about football, but he was quite the coach in other sports, and he was quite the athlete himself. And from what we were always told is he got this name hot. Not from the streak for football, but because of his shooting as a basketball player.
That's exactly right. When he was at Birmingham Southern, he played guard, and, of course, he was not but about 5'8", 5'9", in height, and he had a two-hand shot from the outside. This was before the days of the jump shot or the three-point, goal. But he'd get hot shooting from, outside, would be what would nowadays three-point range. And they just called him and said, "Get hot, O'Brien," and it stuck.
Yeah.
And that's how he got his nickname, Hot O'Brien.
So you were there in the latter part of the 1940s and into 50, and then you graduated in 51. And he only coached another year after that. Now, he did come back to Tennessee in the late 50s. But, the streak ended, and the program did kind of go to just becoming what we would have to say would be mediocre, unfortunately. Talk about that and how that kind of changed from going on a 57-game run without a loss and then kind of slipping into, being just an average team.
Yeah. Well, that streak was fantastic. 57 consecutive games without a loss starting in 1941. It ended in 1947. Lanier finally beat Tennessee after that. Tennessee had beat them in 1946. Over 18,000 people watched in Crampton Bowl in Montgomery in 1946 when Tennessee beat Lanier 12-0. It was a fantastic setting. I remember as a junior high kid watching that game, and Davis Melton, who passed away just recently, ran the Williams reverse, which was the end of round, went 77 yards against Lanier and Crampton Bowl in that game. It was a fantastic thing. And
have you ever experienced anything else like that in high school sports, a setting like that with that many people watching a high school football game?
I never had seen anything like that. I mean, it was people, they shut down the mills and let people go to down to that game. People closed the stores in Tennessee. It went down there.
Yeah.
It was just the surrounding and the atmosphere was just is electric. It was just something, I'm telling you. And I will never forget it. And Coach O'Brien was, he would get a team up by just kind of a low down key type thing. Before the game, when you play a big team, when they were underdogs or something like Lanier, he would say, "Now listen, boys, they have to get up in the morning and put on their pants the same way you do, one leg at a time." He'd say things like that. It just get guys all stirred up And he was a fantastic man as well as a coach, of course.
And I guess even though Tallahassee had this long stretch of victories, when you go into Crampton Bowl and you're playing Lanier, a big school, you're still the underdog, even though you know, you've got that going for you. I guess a lot of people felt like that might be the end coming, and they went in and took care of business. Now, Lanier did end the streak the next season, right?
Yeah, it was heartbreaking in 1947 when Lanier finally beat them, but that was a real good game, and you know, they didn't just dominate Tallahassee. But Charles Stout, who was a star running back in 1947, had been injured, and that really hurt Tallahassee somewhat. Charles Stout was one of those guys who was such a fantastic runner. He wasn't real tall, but he could spin out of tackles and make extra yards, and he had a great burst with speed and everything. And he had a nickname called Newley. And every one of those players just about had a nickname in those days, and it was exciting.
How about that?
They lost just the one game in 47 that ended the 57-game unbeaten streak. The next year, they lost again to Lanier. They did lose to Lanette as well, but they had two ties that year. It was 0-0 ties. And so they were 6-2-2 the next year. And then the following year would be the year, I guess, when you came in. They were 4-4-1 and then went 4-6. Your final season as a player. Talk about that time at Tallahassee when you were a player for Coach O'Brien.
Yeah, my senior year, we started out fantastic in the season of 1950. We won the first three straight games to start with. And then we hit a three-game group that we got beat 13-6.
In every game, 13-6, three straight times.
Some of our players were hurt. You know, we didn't have the depth at that time that they'd had in the past. And, you know, I'm not making excuses. We got beat. But that's part of the reason it was a 4-6 season.
Yeah, and that is an odd thing that you lost three straight games after winning three, and the scores were 13-6 each and every week for those three losses. So some close losses, yeah.
That's right. But we bounced back and we beat Charles Henderson or Troy High, you know, back then, and we played Lanier a real good game. And by the way, that year of 1950 was the first year that Bart Starr was his quarterback for Lanier.
Wow. So you were weren't you the quarterback for Tallahassee?
Yeah. And at the end of the third quarter, we had them 7-6, but they beat us by. They got two touchdowns in the fourth quarter because we were just worn out. We were playing both sides, you know, and they had enough people to keep putting fresh people in, and they beat us, you know, by two touchdowns by scoring those two touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
Bart Starr, and you got to go up against him. I don't know many people that could say they've done that.
Huh?
Well, we intercepted him, too, by the way, that night. Doyle Frazier intercepted him, and I was right behind Doyle. And Doyle, I was playing cornerback, and he was playing a linebacker, and he dropped back and caught the pass, intercepted the pass, and Bart Starr threw. Tried to throw it to Nick Jimenez, who was his famous end at that time. Now, I hollered to Frazier to follow me, and we had a clear thing down the field, but he didn't hear me, and he went back to the left, and they tackled him, so we didn't get a touchdown out of it. But we did. We could brag about it for years that we intercepted Bart Starr.
You know, I was told this by your buddy Les down there, Les Perrault. He said, I guess this might have been the first game you were the quarterback in your would have been your junior season. You're going up against Auburn, and you got an opportunity to make a play, and you did something that you weren't supposed to do, actually. Tell about that.
Yeah, that was my first game as a quarterback, as a junior, and we were playing Auburn High, and I watched that they were coming in, you know, because we were basically a running team. Most of his teams were that way. And so the, you know, cornerbacks and all were kind of creeping in. So I had a tall end, about 6'3", 6'4". His name was Marin Clark. And I said, Marin, we're going to run a pass play, and you'll be behind him, and you'll be ready for the ball. So he did, and he got open, and I threw the pass, and it was a long pass, a long touchdown. And when next time Coach O'Brien saw me on the sideline, he said, "Why did you throw that pass?" I said, "Well, Coach, I thought we could catch him off guard." And that's all he ever said. But he always wanted an explanation if you did something that wasn't real prudent plays.
And the final score to that game was?
Yeah, we won that game, and we want to beat them again next year, too.
but you won the game. What's so interesting is you did what you really weren't supposed to do, which was a touchdown play. You got kind of scolded for it, but you won the game 7-0.
Well, I don't know why I did it.
Yeah, you won. But if you hadn't done it, you probably wouldn't have won.
He's that way. He would, if you didn't do something that was real, unless he had called a long play or something, he didn't want you doing that. He wanted you to do the safer things. In those days, I suppose you run over 90% of your pass, your games, plays were just by running plays. And it wasn't an open game like it is today. You didn't have the spread formations and all that. We had the formation of the single wing, and of course, we would, under Coach O'Brien, innovated by having T formation, with a wing back, and then we'd shift sometimes from the T formation to the single wing. And that would kind of get teams off balance on defense. But he was he was innovative. He would do things like drop an end back in pass coverage in days when that would just not, you just didn't do that. Things like that. His mind was so sharp about what to do in a game, it was just uncanny.
That year after you were done, you were recognized as an All-State honorable mention by the Montgomery Advertiser.
Yeah, and Coach O'Brien, he was always finding ways to involve as many boys as possible in his programs. And he got me involved because I'd had an accident with a baseball at age 14 and had to have a special headgear to play football. And he even took an old boxing helmet and cut it away in the basketball so I wouldn't get an elbow or something on my head where part of a skull was missing in basketball. He would just do things that would get guys involved, and that's what I say about it. He was a great man as well as a great coach.
Yeah, what happened in the baseball accident that you had?
When I was 14, we were playing in just a kind of a, cow pasture type pickup game, and we were doing batting practice, and I was off third base warming up the pitch, and a line drive came off of the bat and hit me over my left ear.
Wow.
And knocked me out, gave me a concussion, and I had to have surgery in Birmingham and all that kind of stuff. And had double vision for a while and headaches and all that kind of stuff. And so when I came back from that, Coach O'Brien came over to see me. I still had bandages all over my head and everything. He had an old football. And he said, I understand the doctor said you can't play contact sports. But he said, you get out here and practice in this pasture when you're punting and place kicking. And said, you can be on our team. That's the kind of man he was.
Yeah. What did your parents say when you finally, made the transition as a player?
My dad was a big sports fan. And so when I kept begging the doctor in Birmingham to let me play, he finally said, it's up to you and your parents. You know the risk I've told you. And my dad said, son, do you really want to play that bad? And I said, yeah, I want to play it. I want to play for Coach O'Brien. And he said, okay. So they went all the games. And my headgear didn't come off in football but one time in 2 years. And it was in a pileup. But thank goodness my head didn't get hit, from that.
Wow.
But I look back on it and thought about how foolish I was to do it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have taken anything for it.
Right. So your time after high school it led you into a life of the ministry. So tell how that came about and what you're doing these days.
Well, right now I'm a retired preacher and living in Ozark. I was ordained. Well, I got my local preaching license as a Methodist preacher when I was a senior in high school. And I went on to college at Huntington College and then went to Emory University for my seminary work. And I had 51 years of service in the Alabama West Florida Conference and then served a church after that. And so now today I write a column, a weekly column in the newspaper here as the Southern Star. And I, you know, fill in for preachers that need me to preach. And I still exercise. Old Les sees me just about 5 days a week down at our Family Life Center here in Ozark. And I try to stay active. And for age 80, I'll be 86 in April, so I'm still in pretty good shape for an 86-year-old.
Well, it sounds that way. I don't know if you travel with the team to watch the Eagles play, but I wish we could have met with you when we went down this past fall. But if you're up this way ever again or can stop by or maybe come to a ball game, we'd love to have you on the air with us. If not, we'll maybe see you the next time we're down that way.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. I'll be glad to do that. And thank you. You're very kind to have me on, and I appreciate it.
Anytime. We appreciate you coming on, Billy. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. There you go. Billy Gaither, former Tallahassee Tiger, Dr. Billy Gaither now. How about that? Interesting, huh?
How about that?